This is Talk Radio 1210, WPHT On Demand. On Demand.
Hello and welcome to the Kathy Barnett Show. I'm so very grateful that you will pause for a moment and join me. I have a very interesting guest. I just met her, but this is riveting, and this is a conversation that we need to be having. Because most of us as parents, we know something has gone wrong with the direction of our country, yes, but also over the protections of our children. Guardrails have fallen. What used to be common is no longer common. I feel like my children are less protected today than how I grew up. And if most of you know my stories, that was very precarious times back then. And today, something feels very wrong. And with that, I have my guest. We're going to go ahead and bring her in because I want to use all of my time just kind of siphoning wisdom from her. Allie, I want to call you Hooper, but it's Hopper. Allie Hopper. Hello, Allie. How are you?
Good. How are you doing, Kathy?
I am doing well. Thank you so much for taking time out to be here with us. Let me tell you guys who Allie is, and then we'll get right into it. Allie Hopper is a nationally recognized expert on human trafficking, president of Guard Against Trafficking, and she has testified several times. I'm up to three different times that you've testified. Is that accurate?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, before Congress. So, Allie, let's start from the top. What is happening with our children? You heard how I opened this up. I feel as though guardrails have been removed. I almost feel as though intentionally removed from protecting our children. What's going on with our children right now?
That's a very complicated question. So a lot of it stems from, if we look at the issue with protecting our children, we have to go back to the legislation and the statutes that are in place to protect our children, right? And so when you look at the border being wide open, that went against every single legislative boundary, every single statutory boundary that we as a country have in place that opened the border, that allowed for bad actors and criminals to flow into the country and actually further endanger our children. Now, when you talk about the border, that's one problem. The other problem that comes into play is the indoctrination, the materials that are used to indoctrinate and groom our children while they're in school.
Right.
And then that leads to the hypersexualization of society, our youth, grooming them into, you know, accepting certain behaviors, that certain behaviors are tolerated or are actually even focused on and prioritized. So you see children younger and younger that are more sexualized in nature. Then you get the introduction of the internet and the widespread use of the access to the internet. So these are the kind of things that have changed from a couple decades ago to now, where you have the introduction of the internet, like I said, the indoctrination of children, the sexualization of our youth through education and culture, and then you get the open borders coupled, all of that coupled together, is why there's a severe increased risk to our children today.
Now, I can ask the question, how did we get here? But I don't know if that is as important as how did the majority of Americans get to this place? Like, yes, we always have bad actors. Bad actors have always existed. It exists today. It exists when I was a kid. It existed in the 1700s. But everything that you just talked about, none of these things happen in a vacuum. They feel very intentional. We could see it. Our eyes were wide open. And yet I often think, well, what is it that will cause a father to stand by while a man in a dress walks into the restroom with his daughter? Like, what happens that conditions a man to be okay with that, or to be okay with open borders, and to be okay with the caliber of people we were watching with our own eyes walk into our country? And I don't know if it's because we're just overwhelmed. When you have to care about everything, you tend not to care about anything. Is it because we're just exhausted from caring? What is it from your vantage point? You spent a lot of time out here. You must have thought about this. What has happened to the American person? Not the bad actor, but just mom and pops all around the world. What has happened that has allowed us to be okay with the guardrails being removed?
You bring in a lot of valid points. So I think a couple of things. We are constantly being inundated in the news with everything that is going wrong. And we are in a constant state of fight or flight survival mode. So the everyday American is struggling. They're struggling to put food on their table. They're struggling to maintain a job. They're struggling to be able to provide security and support for their families. Ones that haven't even started a family are struggling to even find places to rent that are reasonable, finding a first home. They're hesitant to start families. So I'm a millennial. I know a lot of millennials in my generation that, you know, in their mid-30s, early 40s are just now exploring buying their first home. There's so many different pieces to this, but I think when we're in survival mode, our first focus is on our immediate needs, meeting our immediate needs. And then we kind of take our eye off the ball on what's happening around the rest of the country. So we're not looking at the long game. We're not looking at what else is going on, what is changing around us to kind of shift us into where we are now. And we have gotten here as a society because we did not remain eternally vigilant and diligent in making sure that our elected officials were accountable, held accountable. They were doing what they promised to do. They were delivering on their campaign promises. And so while we were focused on our everyday lives, things were changing in the long game around us.
Wow. Thank you so much for that. I agree. And I almost feel as though that too is intentional, trying to keep up with what is happening around the world and our own little bubbles is like trying to drink water from a fire hydrant. It is overwhelming and you can't drink it all. It's just too much to digest. Guys, you are listening to the Kathy Barnett on the Kathy Barnett Show with my guest, Allie Hopper. We will be right back in a moment.
Thanks for listening to Talk Radio 1210 WPHT On Demand.
And we're back. Hello, everyone. You're listening to The Kathy Barnett Show. My guest is Allie Hopper. She is a nationally recognized expert on human trafficking, president of Guard Against Trafficking, and she has testified 3 times before Congress. I hear you talk a lot about sextortion. Let's talk, what is sextortion? I guess we could start there, but then I want to kind of weave our way into, and I give you the balance of the time, to talk about, I'm spending a lot of time in AI. I'm really enjoying it, but the more I learn, the more little antennas are beginning to pop up, more red flags are beginning to pop up as I'm diving deeper and deeper into the world of AI. But let's start with sextortion. What is it?
So if you think of the word extortion, it's extorting someone for something, and sextortion is extorting them through sexual means to be able to acquire something. And why it's relevant, why it's important, is the FBI has deemed it the fastest growing online threat to teenagers across the country. It's really important to understand that 60% of child sex trafficking, child exploitation, starts online. And so when we were told about the tales of the white van at the park, to beware of the white van or the man that comes up that's wanting you to help him find his dog, the white van now is in our living rooms. It's in the hands of every child that has a cell phone. While we think that our children are safe, we lock our front door, Kathy, we're cooking dinner. You know, we believe that our children are under our roof and that they're safe in their home and they're okay, but we're none the wiser that we literally have opened a doorway and a gateway for predators, bad actors, pedophiles to be able to access our children directly, in reach directly inside our homes and have access to our children. And that's not to scare people, but it's to create a sense of reality and wake people up to the threat that exists out there. Because ignoring it's not going to fix the problem. It's not going to protect our children. Acknowledging the problem and understanding what we can do about it is how we start to protect our children.
Now, I want you to give us an example, maybe one or two examples of this happening, because although you spend a lot of time talking about the children that have been trafficked across the border, this is not just about children coming into our country via the border. This is These are our children in our home, upstairs in their bed, supposed to be tucked away, dreaming of, I don't know, little starbursts. Who knows? But we think this is something that is happening out there to those children. But you're telling us this is happening in our own living room.
Yeah, it has a potential to happen in our own living rooms if we're not, as parents, aware. And to go back to the sextortion, I'll give you an example of what this could look like. You have a teenager that is on social media, and then they start to engage with a profile. Let's say you have a teenage boy that's starting to engage with a profile that appears to be a teenage girl. They have similar interests. They start to talk and develop a friendship and start to have conversations very frequently. They exchange personal information. Then it escalates to exchanging photos, to potentially exchanging videos, to then, you know, a request where there is a photo that is a little bit more explicit or provocative. And the teenager is none the wiser that the person on the other end of that profile is not had the way they presented themselves to be a teenage girl. It really is a middle-aged man halfway across the country or even in a different country. And now this teenager has sent a explicit photo, and where the sextortion comes into play is where they then identify themselves as, well, I have this material now. And you're either going to continue to send me photos, you're going to send me money, or they have a list of demands. And so that is when the sextortion comes into play, is when those demands are being made. So whether it's money, whether it's favors, whether it's more photos and videos, and then children are actually taking their own lives at an increased rate because they don't know what to do. Yeah. They don't know who to go to. They're afraid that their pictures, their materials, their secrets that they shared are going to be exposed and leaked and put on the internet and sent to all their friends. And so they are actually taking their lives over this. My business partner and I, we trained a community in Fort Worth, Texas on sextortion. And there was a woman in the audience that actually learned about sextortion for the first time, went home, checked her son's cell phone, and realized he was being sextorted. Kathy, I'm not even making this up. Realized he was being sextorted and was within days of taking his own life. This is how talking about the tough issues can actually save lives, because she would not have found out otherwise until it was too late if this training hadn't reached her. And, you know, by God's grace, she was in that room at that time for this training and was able to do the right thing and intervene on her son's behalf. And these are the stories where the internet is a tool. It can be used for so much good, but it can also be used in a very dangerous way if we're not careful and our children are not careful. They're navigating in a very, you know, potentially dangerous area.
And it's open to the world. And so you have to be very mindful of that, you know, and in an age where we had 2020 COVID, children being removed from the natural flow of maturing and engaging in social activities, there's a lot of loneliness. I witnessed that when I was in my own U.S. Senate campaign, when I was working with Vivek Ramaswamy on his presidential campaign, talking to a lot of parents. Loneliness is an epidemic in our country, and so you have a number of children. And I have read a number of stories of children being sextorted and then taking their own lives, or young girls being forced to slide out of their windows when their parents aren't looking and then selling their bodies, or else we're going to share all of your details and, you know, and shame you. And so that is a real issue. But one of the more recent ones is where ChatGPT came alongside a young boy and assisted him in committing suicide. That's extreme. But as I said, I am enjoying myself in learning more about AI and implementing AI. But the more I learn, the more red flags pop up. What are some of those challenges that you're seeing? Because I can't think of a kid who's not on ChatGPT right now.
It's really tough. The parameters around AI are very similar that parents need to kind of implement in their daily lives are the parameters that they would implement for the internet as well. AI is a very powerful tool. Again, it can be used for both good and bad. And, you know, what I've seen out of our children for AI, it's very good to get information, you know, depending on your prompts. It can help you build things. It can help teach you how to do things. But it's also being used as a crutch right now. So a lot of children aren't learning through actually doing. They're not actually reading books. They're getting synopsis out of ChatGPT. They're not learning how to write. They're using prompts for ChatGPT to write their materials now. And so it is now becoming a little bit more of a crutch for our teens and our youth. And AI is just, it's tough because, like I said, the traffickers can use AI. There are a lot of kind of dark spaces in AI that people can find themselves tools in which that they can use to create profiles, anonymous accounts. There was an individual, there was a teacher actually in our state that used AI to take a photo of some of his students and actually make child pornography out of the photos of just a face of a student. And so this is ways that AI can actually be used in a nefarious way. And I was actually speaking with a congressman last week, Kathy, and it was tough because we're looking at legislation for how to help combat AI child created pornography. And I know you have the Take It Down Act.
Are you facing any resistance from other legislators?
Not from other legislators, but more in the language of no child was, if it's completely AI generated child pornography, no, they see it as no child was injured in the harm or making of this content. So there's no victim.
Even using someone else's
image.
If
you didn't use someone else's image, so just used AI to create material.
And there are people who are advocating that this is under the First Amendment, freedom of speech.
And that it's a victimless crime, that there is no victim because, you know, there wasn't a child harmed in the creation of the content. And so now we're getting into dangerous areas where AI is giving these outs to bad actors. But AI, again, is a very powerful tool, Kathy, because now law enforcement are actually using AI to create counter profiles, where they set the parameters to make sure that they're not entrapping individuals, but they're able to communicate with individuals and set a profile of a 12-year-old girl and say, you know, I want to make sure that within the bounds of the law, I'm not, you know, engaging in communication that would be deemed as entrapment. But they're able to maintain these accounts and actually get bad actors to communicate with these accounts and identify who these people are.
Now, I am not...
So AI can be a tool for good.
Yeah. You know, I am not for big government. And yet, I do believe government has a role in creating the type of culture, the type of values, the type of environment in which we're growing up. And even if a predator creates child pornography using created images and it's not real kiddie porn, I have a problem with that, of that kind of thing being so put out there and prolific and creating a space and a callousness about it. Guys, you're listening to Kathy Barnett. I will be right back.
This is Talk Radio 1210, WPHT On Demand.
And we're back. You're listening to Kathy Barnett on The Kathy Barnett Show. And I have my guest, Ali Hopper, who is a nationally recognized expert on human trafficking, president of Guard Against Trafficking. And she has testified before Congress several times. Ali, I remember, I don't know, were you with me the first time Moms for America took a group of moms down to the southern border? Were you a part of that group?
No, I wasn't. Okay. How was that, Kathy?
Well, I mean, it was eye-opening, right? Because, again, and it was so ingenious for Kimberly Fletcher to do this, is to take moms from all around the nation. So there were moms from Arizona, California, New York, me from Philadelphia, all around the nation, and bring us down for about 4 days to the border. And we got to spend 4 days with other moms who live on the border. And we got to go to their home, see how they're living. We got to walk around the border itself. We interacted with law enforcement. And it was eye-opening. And this is under Trump's first term in office. So it wasn't under Biden. I don't think anyone would have dared to go down. Any sane parent would have dared to go down just to do a looky-loo at the border. But under Trump's first term in office, Kimberly Fletcher with Moms for America took all of these mothers down there, and it was very eye-opening. It made me realize that every state is a border state, that this is happening, that there are people in our country. So this is prior to Biden being in office. I began to realize we're not all the same in this country. We don't all want the same thing. We're not like, oh, you have an opinion, I have an opinion, but we're heading down the same road, which is to make America great. No, there are people, I realize, who would advocate for an open border, swing the border doors open, allow any and everything to crawl its way into our country and bedamned with the rest of the world, with the rest of the nation and my children and my family and how I want to live my life. Who cares about me? We're going to fling the doors open. It was my first time of realizing that, oh my God, we have people in very high places with a tremendous amount of power who are advocating for the demise of our country. I don't care what language they use to describe their intention. This will be a nail in the coffin of our country if we swing our borders open and just allow God knows who to come in. A couple of years later, we have Biden. Now we have, you know, some people, no one knows the real number. I say 20 million illegal just walked right into our country, and we don't know who these people are, where they went to, or why they're here, or what they're doing. That's a lot. But that is the realization. And I saw it prior to it happening, this realization, like, oh my God, we have Americans who hate this country or who just doesn't care. They're selfish and they will open up the border. A couple of years later, we had Americans who open up the border, but damned with everyone else and what you think, we're going to do what we want to do. I don't even know what the question is from that. Speak on it.
So
I'm just mad. I'm just venting. Like, what in the world?
You had mentioned you went to the border before Biden, and you were like, yeah, no, I don't know anyone that would go down to the border, you know, under Biden. I went down to the border under Biden. Yes. It was crazy. It was the Wild West, I tell you. And it's really sad because our Border Patrol agents, their hands were tied. They became glorified paper pushers. They couldn't do their job. But the border was literally wide open. So anyone that tries to tell you that people weren't just freely flowing into this country and walking right across in without any deterrent, I saw it firsthand. So I don't really know what else I can do to convince people that it was happening, that unaccompanied children were literally coming into our country with slips of paper. Kathy, we saw it. We talked to some of these children that showed us their piece of paper. We took pictures of it to try and figure out, okay, where did you get this piece of paper? Who is this person? Do you know this person? And some of them were confirming to us that this person was given to them as who to request to be their sponsor. And so when people try and, you know, when they try and negate that fact, it's almost like you're in denial. I know that it's really hard to believe.
Or gaslighting.
Yeah.
Or gaslighting.
It's really hard to believe that this could happen in our country and so blatant. But being in denial that it happened is not going to fix the problem. You need to accept that it happened. You need to realize that it really did happen, that our taxpayer dollars paid for it. These people came into our country. You know, they had fake identification many times because cartels would identity launder these individuals, their country of origin. They could literally ditch their passport and get a whole new name. And Kathy, I'm not joking when I tell you that we talked to someone that said if their passport said their name was Mickey Mouse, that was what went into the database. They could change their name, their date of birth, their country of origin. So they could come into this country from countries of known terrorism and completely wash their country of origin and say that they came from, you know, a country that's not on our radar. And so we had people come into this country that we don't know their backgrounds, we don't know their criminal histories. And so this administration is working so hard to not only find these bad actors and quickly deport them, but find the children.
And what about, yes, Trump is doing a lot. I know a number of people who are working alongside the administration, inside the administration. And I know for a fact that they're working hard and they're, you know, and very diligent. And at the same time, I know that they are running up against a lot of headwind. There are people, knowing what we know, like you mentioned earlier, there was a new report that came out that says the average age of the first-time homebuyer is now 40. That's up from 20. So there was a time when the average age of the first home buyer was 20 years old in their 20s. Now it's in their 40s, right? So there's a lot of implications that come with that. The amount of wealth you can accumulate with equity. You mentioned a few moments ago about how expensive even renting is right now. A lot of these problems are as a direct result of the flooding of our nation with all of these people who need housing. And so now you have a housing crisis in our country where people can't afford to buy a home. It's having a very real impact on Americans. And that's just from an economic perspective. I'm not even talking about morally how just a degradation it is, how degrading it is. But we have Americans who know the implications of what has happened. Like maybe you thought it was a good idea when you did it under the Biden administration, but clearly you realize that's not the case any longer. And yet we still have these sanctuary cities. Yet we still have people who are advocating for violence. We saw that with the Seditious Six. What's going on?
Well, so you mentioned, you know, the economy just being overwhelmed. I wanted to touch on that, too. I mean, think about the impact of our schools and our hospitals, just the sheer volume of people that came in that can't afford those services that are on our social programs paid for by American taxpayers, and the pressure that it is putting on our schools. Our children are being impacted by it. Our teachers and administrators are being impacted by it because they're inundated with the sheer volume of children, most of which can't speak English because English is not their native language, most of which are coming to the school districts with not an education that matches the grade level they're in. The hospitals are overwhelmed. We're having exposure to sicknesses and illnesses that people in the community aren't used to. And so it's put a lot of pressure on our systems. It's put a lot of pressure on our societies, our law enforcement, and our ability to survive in the communities that we're, you know, working in. But going back to your question, sorry, what could you reiterate that again?
I know, right? It's I think that this is a perfect example of just why people are not even paying attention anymore, because it's just so much. It's like Pandora's box. Yeah. Let me just slide in with this. 320,000 children went missing. I think this is a perfect example of what I'm talking about. And no one talks about it. it left the front pages as quickly as it splattered on there. And what even happened to these 320,000 kids that went missing? Why no one is talking about it? And again, it's the same thing. There's just so much to talk about. There's so much to be involved in.
It is. And I know that this administration is looking for them. It became very challenging to track down where these children are. And that's the bulk of my testimony in front of Congress and Senate was focused on this program, the Unaccompanied Alien Children Program, and where these children went. And you're exactly right. It's not just a border state issue. They actually were sent to all 50 states across this country. So, you know, planes, trains, and automobiles, that's what they used on our taxpayer dollars to send these unaccompanied children across the country. And they had no communication with the state child welfare agencies so that even state level agencies could do welfare checks on these children. So they virtually disappeared into the interior of our country. We have no idea how they're doing, if they're okay, if they're still here. And so this administration is trying to locate over 300,000 that were unaccounted for. And I think that the number's at 30 or 40. It's going to take a while. But when you have these sanctuary cities and states that are blocking federal agencies from even being able to come in, they can't do what they need to do to protect this country, find these children. When you have cities and states that are blocking our administration from doing what it needs to do.
Yeah. Guys, you're listening to The Kathy Barnett Show. We'll be right back for our last segment. See you.
This is Talk Radio 1210, WPHT On Demand. On Demand.
And we're back, guys. Thank you so much for listening to The Kathy Barnett Show. I have my guest, Allie Hopper, on air with me. She's a nationally recognized expert on human trafficking, president of Guard Against Trafficking, and has testified before Congress. If people want to reach out to you, Allie, how can they do that?
The easiest way is to actually go to our website, guardagainsttrafficking.org. And it's actually a really good website in that it provides not just our contact information, but other information that can teach people about exactly what we're talking about. Grooming, sextortion, all the different types of human trafficking. We have a human trafficking like dictionary on there. Sometimes all of these terms and definitions get really confusing. And so now there's like a glossary of terms that people can use to understand and better communicate when we're trying to combat this issue.
You know, I talk to my daughter and my son all the time about, I mean, they are my best friends. I love, love, love hanging out with my children. They're great little people. They're such good people, and they're just really a lot of fun to hang around. But I always preference that statement to them with, you will have a lot of friends in your life. You're only going to have one mommy. You're only going to have one daddy. And that is my primary role. I used to have, when my kids were very young, they're now in their late teens. But when they were very young, I homeschooled them because I saw what was happening in the school system. And I was like, not on my watch. And I remember, you know, there was another neighbor. She allowed her little boy. I mean, the way I met her and her little boy was that my daughter ran in the house and said, "Mommy, there's a strange kid swinging on our swing set." And I walk outside, and this little boy, I mean, he couldn't have been more than 4 or 5, but a very precocious little boy. And he would just roam the neighborhood. And this is how I met him. And then I walked him back up to his own home and introduced myself to his parents. And that's how I met them. But she used to always say to me, Kathy is a helicopter parent. And she said it to be a little derogatory, right? And my take on that was, well, if I'm not hovering over my children, who's hovering? Somebody's hovering over my child. Either it's going to be me or it's going to be the predator down the street. Who's hovering? Or AI or something. And I know you and I have talked about, you know, the heavy burdens that most Americans are dealing with right now with just trying to put food on the table and pay the bills, and both families or both parents are working, and life is just tough. And you got to care about everything now, right? You got to care about the rainforest. You got to care about the rain clouds or no rain clouds. There's just so much to care about. that it becomes overwhelming to the system. And yet, your child is only going to have one set of parents. And either you're going to do your job or someone else is going to do your job. And you may not like it. Talk to the parents. What can families do to protect their children right now?
That story, Kathy, is amazing because honestly, my mom raised us the same way. My parents, they were called helicopter parents too, but they raised us the same way. Because to your point, if you're not hovering, someone else is going to. There are people that are watching. There are people, you know, and it's not to scare you, but there's just everyone. Everyone's observing human behavior. When you're out, you should be, you know, out being observant of human behavior and not, you know, just focused on your cell phone. But it's really important to be engaged and aware of what your children are doing. Have a good, solid relationship with your children. I'm a parent too. I have two children that are in elementary school right now. And my husband and I can get very busy with work. We can get very busy with the pressures of life. But we need to prioritize and carve out, you know, just a spot for our children in our world, because they only have a short period of time with us where we can actually help grow and shape them into productive, loving, moral, ethical human beings before they go out into the world. And so we have such a small window of time where we can actually make that difference. And so we need to be engaged with them. We need to have these conversations. They need to know that even if subjects are tough or hard, that they can come to us. Because I would encourage your listeners, you know, to look up Maslow's hierarchy of needs. They talk about it in psychology all the time. But, you know, the basic needs are food, water, shelter, and then it goes up from there. But one of the needs is that community, that belonging, that family, that love, that acceptance. Right. And so that is the void that if a child does not feel that void filled, they will go searching for that void to be filled. And so that is where parents need to be aware of that void and making sure that that doesn't get filled with somebody with nefarious intent. It gets filled with love and belonging, with faith, with friends, with family, with community. So that's what I would encourage people.
Yeah, absolutely. And now what about my daughter was 16 last year was the first time she received a cell phone, a smartphone, right? I cannot begin to tell you how coaches, her friends, mama, everybody got an iPhone. Everyone has this. Even the coach was saying she should have an iPhone. It's like, yeah, but you're not her parent. I am. And she was 16, but up until then she had a dumb phone, I guess, right? Like all you need to do is call me and say, mommy, it's time to pick me up, right? My husband decided it was time, so he gave her a smartphone last year. And we've had a lot of challenges, nothing life-altering for her, by the grace of God, but we were vigilant. Like, give me the phone. What is the code? I'm on the phone. I'm reading. I know all of her friends. They all know me. I take them out so that I can learn and observe these little girls' personalities and all of that. Now, what do you say about that? Because again, you know, some would say I'm doing too much. But again, my thought is, my child is only going to have one set of parents. It is my job. I'm the adult. I know what is out there. I know what is awaiting her. I've been exposed to the nefarious side of the world like you have. So I don't really care what people say. So encourage parents who just want to, one, I think we've talked to parents who are just so busy. You just said you got to carve out space for your children. But now encourage the parent who just want to be a friend, who don't want to step on, you know, who want to walk on eggshells around their child, who doesn't really want to disturb their mental acuity. What would you say to that parent?
So, you know, obviously there's no one set of guidelines in how to parent your child. The way that we do it in our household is, first of all, you know, we are a parent first. Once they become adults, then, you know, then it becomes more of an equal level friendship, you know. But when they are minors, we are their parents. We are their guide, and we guide them. we steer them in the right direction. You know, they're still forming, they're developing, they're changing their minds, they're learning about the world. And we try to protect them from the dangers of the world. So they're not quite well-versed in the dangers that exist out there, because we're trying to, at an age-appropriate way, preserve some of the innocence, right? You know,
right.
My children are in elementary school. I mentioned that. There's no way that I could communicate in a very open way what I do to the fullest extent without harming or risking their innocence. So we need to shield our children in a age-appropriate way to protect their innocence. They're children. They deserve to grow up and be children.
Correct.
But they also know that there are threats that exist out there. So what we do is that there are options out there. There's the Bark phone. There's certain smartphones with parental controls. And then there's programs out there like Cell Phone Permit. When you get to a age appropriate way, this program, and you know, I spoke to the pastor. That's how I found this program. It's a pastor that created this program. And his example is that you don't just hand the keys to your car to your 15-year-old and say, you know, go take the car, just be careful, don't hit anything. No, they have to go through driver's ed. They have to log a certain amount of hours in driver's ed. They have to log hours with their parents before they get their, you know, their permit, and then they get their driver's license. They take a test and get their driver's license. And a car is a tool, just like a cell phone is, just like the internet is, that it can be good. It can get you from point A to point B, but it can also be very dangerous if you're not careful. And so this program actually teaches children how to navigate the internet in a very safe way, and not just against, you know, grooming and sextortion, but cyberbullying, how to navigate in a healthy way on the internet, I think they're introducing an AI tool now, how to navigate AI in a healthy and safe way. And so there are programs out there for parents to use. It's up to you to determine how you want to protect your children. The threats are going to exist out there whether you step in or not. But Kathy, it sounds like you and I are going to step in. And I would encourage any parent to just understand the threats that exist out there and understand that there are mechanisms in place that you can put in place to protect your children. And it doesn't mean you're a helicopter parent. It means that you understand the threats and you don't underestimate them.
That's right. I absolutely agree with that. Again, your kids are going to have a lot of friends, hopefully, throughout life. They only get one set of parents. And I think about what you said earlier. We are given as parents a very short window of opportunity to love, to just smother them with love, to protect them, to put up the guardrails, and to fashion them in such a way that when they're in their late teens, you could say, these are really cool people. I like them. I like hanging out with them, right? Like, how many of us can say that about teenagers today? But you want to fashion them in such a way that you see this little person is a really good person. And then that window begins to change. Now, my son is in college. I don't have the same kind of access and controls and teaching opportunities. And so you only have a short window of time. I would suggest you use it to the best of your ability, parents, to love them and to teach them that there is a way to go, but then there are better ways to go. And you can't do that if you're not at home or if you're not engaged. Allie, I'll give you my last minute.
Thank you so much, Kathy, for speaking on this. It's very important. Like we said, it's a heavy topic, but you know, this darkness is going to exist there until we decide to shed a light on it. And that is what you're trying to do by bringing light to this conversation, is shedding a light on it so that parents, so that communities, guardians, and adults can start to protect the most vulnerable, the most innocent in their communities, and that's our children. And they are the future of this country. They're the future of this world. And so we need to start understanding, you know, really understanding the threats that exist out there and really understanding what we can do to protect them. And that's not to live in a state of fear, but that's to live in a state of understanding and just, you know, you're going to be prepared and this is how you're going to fight back.
I love it. Guys, you have been listening to Kathy Barnett and my guest, Allie Hopper. What is your website again, Allie?
GuardAgainstTrafficking.org.
Blessings. Talk to y'all later.
Thanks for listening to Talk Radio 1210 WPHT On Demand.